I don't trust machines in general. Like at this point, I'm looking at this microphone with a slanted eye.
Right. So I've never trusted a soda machine ever since third grade.
Dangerous.
Oof, never once. Johnny, I'm not going back.
So the way they shoot out of there,
right into the nuts. I was not expecting it to come out Mach 3.
Welcome to the podcast that is guaranteed to improve not only your photography, but your mind, body, and spirit as well. Full of interviews with the top image makers in the industry, where we talk photography, drink whiskey, and fill up the bathtub with High Life and PBR. So grab a juice box, a handful of unsalted almonds, and get ready for the show.
It's still day four, and I can't feel my legs at this point. We are at the tail end of this week and our season, and we have a special surprise last-minute guest, Matt Stagliano. Did I say it right?
You did, as a matter of fact. No one ever
Why
gets
do
it right.
I really want to just go the full Italian accent? Stagliano. Is that like...
If you really want to go Italian accent, you have to soften the G in Stagliano.
Oh, okay, Stagliano. Dang. All right, yeah. Now I know.
Sounds sexy, right?
Do you come from a big Italian family?
No, my dad is like quarter Italian, but he inherited the name, and here I am.
All right, so fair enough. So do you identify Italian?
I have to. With a name with that many vowels,
yeah.
I absolutely have to identify as Italian.
I like the name.
So I just leave it. I let people guess.
Yeah. So I got a very brief background, but it seems like you have transitioned into photography, into your career, and you had an entire whole other different life.
Yeah. I've reinvented my career about every, I don't know, 2 or 3 years. So
2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it's been nuts. I went from college to biotech to teaching to bouncing in bars to managing nightclubs to biotech again, high tech, right? All sorts of careers, and then got laid off in 2010, started taking pictures, and here I am. So it's been about 10, 13 years that I've been doing photography, and I've stuck with it that long. But I change genres about every 2 or 3 years, commercial to fine art to boudoir to, you know, personal branding.
Yeah. Like, so what was it about the other careers? Were you just not happy? Was it not fun, not fulfilling?
Yeah. So, you know, I've always been some level of creative, but always thought I had to follow the path of go to school, get a job, you know, make the money, white picket fence, married kids, all that sort of stuff. And it never made sense to me. I was always a musician, multi-instruments, DJ, graphic arts, that sort of thing. And I never felt like I fit in the corporate world. I never felt like doing customer service or HR or IT was fulfilling in any way. So when I got laid off and I was able to take a year, I got a year severance, took a year off to do nothing but just kind of figure out what the next step was. And I started taking pictures, going to the gun range a lot, taking pictures on the gun range. That started getting picked up on social. Companies started picking it up, and I was like, they want to pay me for this work. I guess I'm a photographer now. And that's where it started. My first commercial job was for the NRA. And from there on out, I was like, I really dig this. I like telling the stories. I like looking at situations a little bit differently and not just taking a pretty picture, but telling an actual story in it. And so following that path has kind of gotten me to where I am now, which is not high-end portrait work. It is connected stories, like really digging into who people are so I can capture that rather than just make photography a retail sale. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. So what's your ritual or approach to a shoot before the shoot starts? How are you kind of getting to know the person and kind of setting the mood?
Yeah, so after they send me whatever inquiry form, whether it's through the website or a DM or something like that, I bring them in for a consultation, hopefully to the studio, for about an hour, 2 hours, and we sit and we chat. I just get to know them. Don't really talk about my process too much until I have a chance to feel, is this going to be a good fit? Am I the right fit for them? Because it's pretty easy to tell what a person wants right off the bat. And so once you get to dig in a little bit deeper, that's when I realize, okay, the ideas start to formulate. They want personal branding, but they love a high key style. or they just went through cancer treatment and want to capture their transformation. Or, you know, if they're celebrating just the fact that they got through a divorce unscathed and they're reinventing themselves. Once I find out those things, then I can start to storyboard, mood board, lay out what I want the shoot to look like, and we work on it together. So by the time they ever get to the studio to do the shoot, they already have a good idea of what we're going to be doing, yeah. And they get excited about it. They become part of the process rather than just this transaction. And that makes the entire experience for them a lot better.
What's your favorite part of the shoot? Styling to post-production, where do you like flourish?
I love the non-planned parts of the shoot where you just start to play, right? You get into flow and the lighting's good, the posing's good, you're starting to connect. And then you're like, let's just play a little bit. Let's follow where this idea goes. That's my favorite part. It's never planned. It just kind of happens. I always make sure that I get the shots that I have to get for the client, right?
Yeah.
Once that's established, now it's, you know, game on. Let's play a little bit. That's my favorite thing to do. I think what's most fulfilling is at the end when I'm revealing the photos to them about a week later and they get to see it and I see the emotion and I get to see them see themselves differently. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Right? There's never anyone that... I don't allow people to pick themselves apart in the studio. So if they see something they don't like, I ask them why. We dig a little deeper. I reframe it for them. And they start to understand what they look like in this picture and what it represents versus just a picture of them.
Yeah.
Just a portrait.
Yeah. Who do you rely on the most in your team? Are you... Do you have a big like hair and makeup? Do you have a huge wardrobe? Do you do a lot of it yourself?
No, I do it all myself. So
even the hair and makeup?
No, I have one woman who is on and off. I try to shoot natural when I can.
Do you have a big ass window in your studio?
I do, yeah. So it's an old converted mechanics garage. So I have two 10-foot by 12-foot glass garage bay doors.
Nice. What direction do they face?
They face northwest.
Yeah. Nice. North, if you got big glass doors, north is the best, I think.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So, you know, I built these big curtains so I could, theater curtains, so I could black them out if I need to. But it fills the space with this really soft light, and it's gorgeous in any situation. So, yeah, so no, not a big team. I use one makeup artist. The rest is me. I thought I needed a big wardrobe because I was doing some glamour. I was doing some beauty. No one ever chose anything out of the wardrobe. So I was just like, I don't need this. I donated it all and just don't use it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. What is your favorite part of editing? A lot of people, you know, at least half of the people I think that we meet, for the most part, it's either like, I outsource it, I fucking hate it, or like, that's my favorite part of the process.
That's my jam.
Yeah?
I love it. Yeah, I love retouching. And I don't do a ton of compositing, but I love getting skin right.
Yeah.
Love getting the like the light gradients right. You know, I'd probably spend, I've gotten better at it. I'm starting to use AI for some, you know, some of the initial color correction, white balance stuff.
Yeah.
But I always go in and I spend probably a half an hour in image, skin retouching, making sure that all the little threads that no one's ever going to see are corrected.
Yeah.
Right. So from Pratik Naik, Seth McCullough, right, all those guys that I learned from, I try to apply all of that into.
Never heard of them. Never heard of those guys.
they're up and coming.
Yeah, up and coming. So it's interesting, and we've had some predictions about the AI. Mm-hmm. And I think the general consensus now is for global adjustments in Lightroom, if you do like a lot of batch processing, you can get it really, really close and save a lot of time.
Yep.
But for things like skin and local adjustments, it's not there yet. So if it will get to that point pretty quickly and it can do that part of the process, are you going to choose to let it do it for you? Or are you going to do it because it's like therapeutic or cathartic, whatever?
I want my vision to really come through in the photo. I can't trust that to a machine. I don't trust machines in general. Like at this point, I'm looking at this microphone with a slanted eye. Right.
So I've never trusted a soda machine ever since third grade.
Dangerous.
Oof, never once. Johnny, I'm not going back.
So the way they shoot out of there,
right into the nuts. I was not expecting it to come out Mach 3.
Seven up, two down. So I think with respect to AI, like, I want efficiency. Get me through the boring stuff as fast as possible. Color correction, white balance, right? Basic adjustments. But I always want to touch the photo myself because I feel I owe that to the client to make sure that I'm not trusting something, trusting a machine that might not get it right, and then I don't know how to fix that.
Yeah.
So if it can make my process more efficient and take that 30 minutes per photo down to 10 minutes, awesome. But if I'm looking at a photo, I'm still going to do some retouching to it. I have to. I have to make sure the quality's there.
Yeah. What's your least favorite part of photography? Why?
Booking, marketing, just kind of like everybody else, right? Where there's that part of me that never wants to put myself out there, right? There's fears, there's blocks, people are going to make fun of me, imposter syndrome, whatever it is, right? But I find that that's the weakest part, but that's what gets you the most business, right? Everybody has a hard time mentally doing self-promotion. They feel salesy, they feel gross about it. And I'm no different, but it's a necessary part of the process. So for me, as a business owner, when I look at it as a business, I just want to outsource it, find the right team that understands my vision for what I do, for the brand, and they can market it, and I can pay them. Yep. And I don't have to feel that frustration or that stress around it.
You mentioned a little while ago, a few weeks later, you do a reveal.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked to a lot of people, and it seems to be split. In-person sales right away.
Yeah.
So it's like, you got to figure out it right now. Mm-hmm. There's like kind of more pressure or more of a like presentation, and like a lot of people will spend money printing things out.
Right.
So have you done both, and like maybe speak more about your process and like how you approach that part of the sale?
Yeah. So when I started doing in-person sales, I followed the Sue Bryce method, and I printed everything out, and I had a reveal wall, and I would bring clients in, and I'd show them 30 or 40 images on the wall. They'd walk out the door with the ones that they purchased. What I found was that they were choosing images because that's all I was showing them. It wasn't necessarily their favorite image. It was my favorite image, and I thought they were beautiful, and they were, but I was getting the feeling like they wanted to see more. So I switched to a digital reveal, right? Saving all the time retouching, printing, all the cost of goods on mats and prints, right? I got rid of all of that. And I bought a 55-inch TV, and I go through a reveal on the television. And we go through 150, 160 photos. And I always have in the back of my mind the ones that I think are going to be my favorite. And rarely does the client choose those.
Yeah.
So give the client what the client wants. And so when I show them that and they choose the images they want, I then go and retouch those. It's a more efficient process. It makes me more money. And it's just, it's easier all around. I don't have to spend all that time and energy up front on products that they're not going to buy.
Yeah, that makes sense. And did you notice a specific like increase in revenue almost right away when you switched?
Immediately. So my average before, when I was doing the printed reveal, I'd sell 8 to 10 images, which was about a $1,700 to $2,000 sale, depending on what year it was. When I switched to digital reveals 2 years ago, instantly started doubling. So my average now is closer to $3,800 per sale, and it tends to be around 20 images. So instantly saw the average being 15 images, 16 images, 20 images versus 6, 8, 10.
Yeah, makes sense.
Because they have more variety to choose from.
Yeah, good advice. How many images would you say you shoot in a session?
I overshoot. So I love capturing that millisecond moment for people, right? The in-between moments. That's where I live.
Yeah.
And it's not good enough to just have a nice smile. Like, I want connection in the eyes. So I overshoot. I'll typically shoot probably 1,000 photos. But my sessions tend to be about 4 hours long.
Okay.
We'll do about 5 or 6 different outfits, take some breaks, right? Gauge people's energy. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer. But for the most part, it's around 1,000, 1,200 images per shoot. And I wind up showing about 10% of that.
How much, do you have one of those hard drives full of work that you should be getting to and looking through, but you don't because you're off shooting the next thing.
Anything personal.
Yeah.
Any personal project has been sitting on my NAS for months and months and months.
What sort of personal projects are they?
So I like to just work on different parts that I don't offer clients, right? So I'm not a huge boudoir shooter, but I'm trying to find a way to shoot portraits that are intimate in my style.
Yeah.
I don't do traditional boudoir, but I want to do sexier photos for women that are asking me at the end of the shoot, hey, can we do some boudoir? And so I've been working on that. I've been trying to get a little bit more into the fashion side. I'm not a fashionable guy, but I'm trying to get into the fashion side. And what can I take from this style of photography? What can I take from this style of photography and incorporate it into what I do? And I think by doing that, it just gives the client more variety. But yeah, there's my favorite to shoot is just pretty standard, up-level personal branding. It's not like arms crossed realtor pose. It's just this really engaged leaning over a chair, like we just had a really deep conversation. That's where I live. I love having that type of connection with the client.
Do you have a favorite pose?
There is. I have one of those old school folding wooden chairs, and I turn it backwards, have someone straddle it, lean on the top. It's a very relaxed pose for people, and almost everybody can do it. And I just get them to lean into it, breathe a little bit, and that's almost always sells for me.
What are some quick posing tips that you think newbies should know, like top five? What are the top five posing tips to get people to pose better?
Top five. So I think in posing in general, understand that every body is different. Larger bodies, smaller bodies, tall, short, whatever it is. You have to understand how people move. So watch how people move. You don't have to do it in the studio. You can do it at the mall. Just observe how people move their bodies, how they sit, where are they comfortable. So when I'm working with someone, I ease into the posing. And I say, okay, let's just turn this way. And I start to show them, see, if I turn you this way, if I lift your chin up, it reduces this, it minimizes these parts. And understanding from that initial consultation what makes them concerned about themselves or self-conscious, I make sure that I'm not posing them in a way that's going to emphasize that, right? So understand your client, understand their body type. Know light, what light's going to do on a body, right? So that you can pose them a certain way and you don't have darkness on one side of their face. Even though it's a great expression, it was just poor lighting choice or poor positioning.
Yeah.
So things like that, I think people overthink posing. And as soon as you start to put a client in a pose that makes them feel really uncomfortable and you're not explaining why you're doing it that way, then you lose all connection to the client. But if you can say, I know it feels weird, but trust me, it's going to look great in a second, and you show them the back of the camera, this is why I made you feel uncomfortable for a minute. and their eyes light up and they're like, oh my God, yes. Now they trust you. And you can work those poses a little bit more, change up the positioning, right? But you have to build that trust with the client. Otherwise, they just feel weird in front of the camera.
Yeah, yeah. What do you do when a client, you know, obviously most people are going to be nervous.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So what do you do to kind of disarm them when they first get there and kind of like, you know, set the mood?
Yeah, I always sit down, right? So a lot of folks will rush people right into hair and makeup and get the day started. And I have people come in, sit them down. All right, just to go over it again, here's what we're going to do for the day. Do you want a cup of tea, a cup of coffee? What can I do to make your experience better, right? I always have some food or cocktails out or something. Then we get into hair and makeup. I'm talking to them about their day, telling them about the town that we're in. I have a lot of people come in from out of state. So just, again, talking to them, making them laugh, right? Being a little self-deprecating, trying to just ease the nerves that I know are there. Then start hyping them up as they look great. Oh my God, this looks amazing on you, right?
You got the voice for it. I believe you right away. When I met you yesterday, I was like, you can tell me anything. I believe it.
I was looking directly in your eyes when I said that. And I mean,
yeah, you had a soft wink too. Like, yeah,
it was nice.
That voice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh man.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just try to make sure that they feel good about themselves. And then I'm like, I acknowledge the weird nerves. yeah, you probably feel real weird, right?
Yeah.
You don't know what to do with your hands.
You're like, I'm nervous too.
Yeah. And I am. Yeah. I'm like,
this is my first week doing
this. This is my first time I've ever shot that. I've said that so many times. I'm like, oh my God, first time I'm using this camera. It works great. So I think it all comes down to that trust building process, right? Yeah. So if I were to bring somebody in and just rush them into the shoot, it's going to look like you just rushed them into a shoot. Yeah. But I want people relaxed.
What do you say to people when they look at your camera and they go, oh my God, such a good photo. You must have a really nice camera.
I don't hear that as much as I used to.
Yeah.
I think people have learned it, but I say, yeah, and I don't know how to use any of it. I just put it on this little green A and it does all the work for me. I think they start to understand like, oh yeah, I sounded like a real dick there. For a second. You know? So it doesn't concern me a lot when people say that. My chance to educate them, right?
Yeah. If you could invent a lens and you can make it however you want.
Oh man.
What would you invent? What's your dream lens that maybe doesn't exist?
The perfect skin retouch, no matter what's an issue with your skin.
Oh, so it almost pre-edits the skin.
Yep.
How would you know what?
I haven't built the marketing plan for this lens yet. Feature list is pretty short.
What's the aperture of it? How fast is this lens?
0.9. Yeah, we're going under F1.
Is this a fixed lens, or is it like 0 to 1,000?
No, it's... Let's get real inside your nose. No, I think definitely a prime lens, f.9, blur everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Have that. And instead of bokeh in the background, it's star wipes, you know? Just like star wipe bokeh.
A good star bokeh.
Yep.
That sells for real.
I'm in. I'm sold. I think, hey, the idea is like at least 90% of the work.
Well, the thing is, I'm just...
After you have the idea, the rest is easy.
I'm just going to drop my voicemail. You need this lens. This lens will make you look amazing.
Yep. So outside of natural light, what are your go-to lighting setup modifiers? What are you using?
I use a lot. I'm a kind of a one modifier guy. I got a 39-inch Rotolux that I love. I use flashpoint lights when I'm using strobes. And I've just got this Rotolux Deep Octa that I love. I just switched over to a 7-foot deep Octa, like one of these massive things with a grid.
So you can stand in it over you.
Basically, yeah. I mean,
it's like a teepee.
It's the short Italian thing, right? So it's massive, and I throw a grid on it, and I just put this big shaft of light on someone. And I like that. I like contrast. I don't want to light everything up and be bright and airy. I want it to be a little bit edgier.
Yeah.
And so it depends on the client, clearly, right, what they look like and how they hold themselves. But for me, when I'm doing the work that I love to do, it's a one modifier thing. I'm switching over to constant light just for ease. So I've got aperture stuff, Amaran stuff in the studio, and I'm really digging the constant light.
Me too.
But I haven't transferred 100% yet.
Do you think you will?
Most likely. I mean, with the advances in the stuff now, with the way that LEDs are working, the output of them increasing so much.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you?
Yep. It was cool a few years ago when LEDs started coming out, and it's like, oh, it's not a million degrees in here, but they didn't go very far. You know, it was like, shit, this is like barely any light at all.
I got a closet full of them.
Yeah. And me too. You know, they first started coming out, like Westcott has a whole series, and they're portable and they're light, kind of cheap, but man, much harder with modifiers. And it's just like, once you put a modifier in there with the inner baffle, you're done. Like, shit, there's no light. I need 7 of these.
Yeah. I have the 300D Mark II from Aperture, the 300D, right?
Yep.
I put that lantern modifier on it and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Anything bigger than that and you need more power. So now I'm looking at the 600s. Now I'm looking at the 1200s.
Yep.
Right. Doing bigger and bigger projects. If I'm going outside, I want to overpower the sun doing a commercial project. You need bigger light.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that companies are coming out with that power.
Yeah. I just got the a whole set of Aperture that I ordered and got the focusing lenses for the 300s. And I have those around our studio. And oh my gosh, if we want to throw a completely sharp line, like literally 30 feet away, oh, on the 1200D, I got the D because they have the most output.
Yeah.
So it's just daylight only, which I'm fine with.
Yeah, I don't do bicolor or.
Yeah. Because once you go to bicolor, it goes down like 30% about of power, that. Something like that. And then the gels, it's cool to have color, but no, almost no power. So, really excited about.
Yeah, I use a couple of different modifiers for the constant lights. I like using a Fresnel with the barn doors.
Yeah.
And really just, like you said, magnifying that in and being able to have that hard light source across the studio. I got about 2,000 square feet. So like across the studio and you just send this laser beam. It looks great. It's a really kind of a cool hard light look.
Yeah. Ooh, I just had an idea. Maybe I should get a 3D printer. It'd be kind of funny to kind of like print out or cut out like funny out like
gobos.
So yeah. It's like you put it in there and then it's like kind of like a guy like stabbing someone else like in like through the window. Think of all the fun we could have.
Man, that would sell.
That's why I shouldn't be allowed to do things without supervision. Matt, where can everyone go to find your work, check out your portfolio, follow you on the socials?
Sure. Since Stagliano is not easy to spell, my company is Stone Tree Creative, and it's stonetreecreative.com or at Stone Tree Creative on every platform. So you can go there, check out the galleries. I do a podcast. I do YouTube videos. I don't do a lot on Facebook. Instagram is pretty much where I live. At Stone Tree Creative.
Do you do any workshops or any teaching?
Starting to educate now. Nice. So I'm taking on clients. I finally got past that imposter syndrome and I'm like, well, I got a lot of stuff I can share. So being around a lot of other educators, I realize I can do it, but stay in my lane. And I'm working slowly, a couple of students, and then I'm starting to offer workshops this year at the studio. So for the local folks, we have nothing out in the middle of Maine. So doing the best I can to educate other photographers and have people come in and do workshops.
Nice. Well, if you're in the upper Northeast, is that correct where you're at?
Sure. Great.
What do you guys call it? The East? The Northeast?
It's down east. Down east in Maine means you're going north.
Really?
Yeah. It's backwards.
There are bears up in Maine, yeah?
Yeah, bear, moose. I got them in my backyard.
We saw a cocaine bear 2 nights ago here. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it.
It is awesome. Highly recommend seeing cocaine bear.
Is drug and addiction...
Never going into the woods again.
Is drug addiction a big problem in the bear community?
Yeah, you know, they missed opioids. Yeah. They didn't get that problem. They love the cocaine.
Yeah.
They love... And the bear... I don't want to ruin it.
Okay.
But the kids, the bear cubs... Love it the most.
As you do.
Matt, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to hanging out again, hopefully in the near future. I know you just feel like good people.
I appreciate that, man. Right. You too.
Thank you, man.
Bye.
Well, that's all for today's podcast. Join us next time for more interesting discussion about the wonderful world of photography and her dark, magical secrets. I'm fascinated with Instagram. It's such a simple construct. Just take a picture and post it on the internet. The other day, I took a picture of my neighbor's pet rabbit. He told me not to post it, but, you know, I did anyway. Wow.